Welcome back to Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My next guest has held most of, if not all, the jobs in professional basketball. An all-star point guard who won three championships with the Bulls, a stint in the Bulls front office, a scout, a broadcaster, and now a super agent. Of course, I'm talking about the one and only B.J. Armstrong. Armstrong has successfully navigated his post-playing career, and he currently represents several NBA stars, including former Chicago Bull Derrick Rose. It's hard to believe that this is the 30th anniversary of the year he was drafted. My pleasure to welcome B.J. Armstrong to Extension 720. Do you think about that? Do you think that it's been 30 years?
Yeah, well, I don't really think about 30 years, but God, just listening to that intro, I was like, it's been a long time, you know? These gray hairs are well-earned, you know? But it's been great, and I was so lucky. I was walking around the city today, and I was so lucky to be drafted here. And to be able to experience Chicago, a kid from Detroit, via Iowa, to be able to call this home and play here and experience it, it was a dream come true. This is truly, wherever I'm at in the world, this is truly one of the more amazing cities, if not the best city in the world.
Is this the kind of place where, and this happens with the 85 Bears, they can't go anywhere without somebody jumping on their back and high-fiving in a whole bit. You guys won three championships, the Bulls won six altogether, but with you, you can't be anonymous in the city of Chicago.
Well, I'm small, so I just kind of fit in. You know, I can see, you see these football guys, they're big, and you know, the other guys are so tall, but I just blend right in, right? You know, it's always funny. I just kind of keep my head down and people look, they'll be like, nah, why would he be walking around the city? So it's always funny today, but I just kind of blend in. I've always kind of blended in and just, I fit right in with everyone else. So it's a good look for me.
You know, the United Center was built in 93. You had the chance to play in the Chicago Stadium, the first championships and of course your rookie season. You know, you don't even think about that because it feels like when you say the Chicago Stadium, that's for the 70s or that's for the 80s. But that you had a chance to play in a building that is long gone. Do you think about the fact that you have played in places that no longer are part of our consciousness?
Yeah, I do. And I was, again, you know, just right place at the right time. I saw the explosion, if you will, of professional basketball globally. You know, there was this guy here that wore 23 that really took the game to the next level, not only from viewership on television, but, you know, what he was able to do, talking about Michael Jordan, what he's able to do to transcend the game as far as how popular the game is today. I mean, you look at all of the foreign players that are playing today, a third of the league now are foreign players. And that's all because of the Dream Team and Jordan fans. And I can remember my family who lived out of state. They couldn't wait to see the games on WGN because, you know, we're a national, you know. But now you watch the games now, and you know
everybody's got the package.
And the DirecTV and all of the things. So, but I just remember those days, and I remember the stadiums and how they started figuring out how these stadiums are built. You know, strategically how they're built, mathematics, they figured out how to make money doing it. So I've been able to watch the expansion and explosion of the game and the business of it, and it's been great.
When you were a player, when you were playing the game and being an all-star for the Chicago Bulls, did you recognize the business aspects of this, the business end of the NBA? When did you start to realize, you know, oh, I'm starting to figure out the Rubik's Cube that is business of basketball?
Well, the first thing, growing up in Detroit, kind of my first introduction, I don't know why this stuck with me, but my first introduction, I remember I was able, my parents allowed me to stay up to watch the tape delay of Magic Johnson in like 1979 or somewhere around there, 79 or 80, when he was a rookie. I couldn't have been more than like 7th or 8th grade, somewhere in there. And he was going to play in the NBA Finals versus the Sixers, and my parents were going to allow me to stay up to watch the tape delay. Think about that. The NBA Finals were tape delayed. And that's kind of stuck with me. And then it went from tape delay to, like, you could actually watch the games on Sunday live. And that was a treat. And then you watch it where, I think it was NBC at the time. Mm-hmm. I think it was CBS when I first came in. Then it went over to NBC. And then you maybe played two or three times. And I was like, whoa.
There's one thing to be an NBA player, but for you to be a part of the Chicago Bulls and to be a teammate, a backcourt teammate of Michael Jordan, you played in situations where the audiences were not just who was in the arena. I mean, there were millions and millions of people around the world at this point that started to find ways to watch Michael Jordan and you and the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, and then, you know, as I was saying, you know, and then Michael was reaching another audience. And I remember we had the conversation. I was like, you know, we go to practice and everybody would be tired. And I remember he would have things to do. I would ask him, I was like, well, I just want to see where you're doing. Like, how are you doing? And he would let me tag along, right? I just wanted to see, like how do you really film a commercial? Like, that concept wasn't, you know, he was working with all of these people. But I remember he was, his main goal, I remember him telling me we were riding down to downtown from, at the time we used to practice in Deerfield. And he said, my goal was to see how far I can get off the sports page. And I thought, like, who thinks like that?
Yeah, right.
He was like, that's my goal, is to see how far I can get off the sports page. Now, if you got in the sports page, that was like...
That was great.
That was great. Like, you made it, right? I was on the front page of whatever, the sports section. He was trying to see how far he could get off of the sports page. Now, that was a revolutionary idea to a young kid from Detroit to think that, you know, there were other sections in the paper.
You always probably get the question about what you learned about playing alongside people like Michael Jordan or Scottie Pippen or Horace Grant or playing under Phil Jackson.
Right.
But you rarely get the question about what you learned off the court. And it seems to me that right there, that's a great insight to what Michael Jordan was thinking, but what made Michael Jordan different than, besides just his God-given talent, than other NBA players.
And looking back on it now, I think what made him different was he understood the business better than anyone else. What we all understand now, 30 years later, he understood then. He really made the biggest influence on me off the court because he shared with me why he wears suits. And if you ever watch a Michael Jordan interview, he would never do a post-game interview without being in a suit. I was like, why do you do this?
Right.
Why do you do this? Like, he would get ready, but he would always be in a suit because he said he understood that his audience were people in suits.
That's amazing.
Now, we're talking in the late 80s, 90s, where he had the vision, I play in shorts and a tank top, but my audience is Wall Street. Mm. And he wanted to have people view him and such. So he knew that that was going to help him in his off-court endeavors and whatever he was doing.
Wow.
So that, to me, was like he was just so far ahead of all the rest of us with the business of it and seeing what this could be in television. And now, you know, we take it for granted. But that's where he was at then. And so, you know, I give him credit for understanding the business and having the foresight to see that. And now we kind of take it for granted. But he was already there back then.
Well, it makes a lot of sense why you continued and have had success off the court after playing days. B.J. Armstrong is my guest tonight on Extension 720. We'll take a quick break. Come back. More with B.J. here on WGN. Stay with us. Welcome back to Extension 720 on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest, former All-Star point guard and three-time champion, B.J. Armstrong of the Chicago Bulls, now a super agent. And you did so many different things in your career post-playing. I want to get into it, too, because I have a lot of questions about the business side of basketball and how you know it today. But I think about the games that you were involved in, whether it be a championship series against the Trailblazers or against Magic Johnson or games. I remember when Jordan left and, you know, you guys had to kind of carry it without him and some of those iconic games that you were involved in. Do you remember in the same way fans do? Because Pete and I will sit here and we'll be like, oh, remember when Pippen dunked over Patrick Ewing and we all freaked out and got the technical. Do you remember it that way or as a player, is it a different mindset?
It's a totally different mindset. Until my oldest son now, who's 18, came along, I never had a chance to appreciate the game from a fan perspective. And it's been fun for me as a parent now with my three kids to watch them because they are fans. And to be able to experience the game has given me a whole new way of viewing the game. As a player, I always looked at it technically of what I needed to do to win that game. So getting dunked on was like no big deal to me. That's part of the game, right? That's like, well, if you walk in the rain, you're going to get wet, right? right? If you play in enough games in the NBA, you're going to get dunked on, right? So I've always looked at the game from a technical point of view and just watching, like when I watch a game, I find myself like looking at the game going, okay, what's the scheme? What's the plan? What's their intentions? You know, how do you keep the game close? You know, what players have an advantage? I'm looking at all of the things, and then I'm like with my kids, and they're like, "Dad, did you see that dunk?" And I was like, "Oh no, I didn't see the dunk." You know, so I've learned over the years how to become a fan, but I always slip back into the technical nuances of the game because that's how I viewed it, and that's how I had to play it. I had a job to do. So I kind of understand.
You're a professional, right?
My profession and becoming a professional. So, but I'm slowly hanging out at the games now, eating popcorn and doing all the things that you do.
You have a number of clients in the NBA, young players or veterans, but do they approach it the same way these days? Kids the same way that they're professionals and they're thinking about the technical and they're not paying attention to getting dunked on and all the things you just mentioned as a player?
It's been fun for me to watch kind of the evolution of the game of basketball. You know, when I came into the league, I was expected to be able to assist and help the team, right? I didn't get drafted with the idea of development. Like, player development wasn't...
You were B.J. Armstrong. We already knew who you were. You came out of Iowa.
When I came to this team, like, they were like, okay, how can you help us? It wasn't like, okay, we're going to give you 3 years, B.J., and you're going to develop, and then we'll figure out who you are going to be. No, it was like, okay, we got a job to do. This is your job. And if you can't do it, you know, it was always the Wally Pipp story, right? If you can't do it, we'll find someone else that's going to do it, right? I mean, so I was expected to become a professional, and it was probably going to be in my best interest to be a professional as quickly as I can because I was going to be out. Today's kid has a different mindset. You know, we understand that we're going to probably draft a kid who's not ready, much younger. And now we're going to have to teach them, if you will, or at least expose them to how to become a professional in this league. So it's a different mindset.
Does it make the game better or worse?
I think it's a very complicated answer. And the reason I say it's complicated is because, look, for better or for worse, these kids are going to come. They're going to come, right? Whether they go to school or they don't go to school. And I give the example of what it is, right? Before I give you my opinion, the best young players in the game today are all foreign players. So the Joel Embiids, the Jokic, the Nurkic, the Porzingis, the Ben Simmons, Giannis right up the road here, Lauri Markkanen, they're all kids that were born outside of the United States. So whatever is going on at that level around the world, now they've caught up to us here. All the best young players in the game right now are foreign-born players. That's a fact.
And they don't have an NCAA. There's no college system.
So does it make the game worse or better? Those kids are amazing. I think now what we have to do here domestically is figure out what is in the best interest of today's youth. What's the best interest of today's kid, right? The NBA game is a different game. It looks the same as the NCAA, but it's a totally different game. The NCAA is a game it's not played anywhere else in the world other than here. So when these kids only go to school for 6 months and then they have to learn a different game and you put their age and inexperience all into it, what do I really expect?
But the Porzingis's and the Giannis's you're talking about, they're playing an NBA ready game already. Yeah,
They're playing in a game that resembles the NBA. The international game, there's some similarities to the game, right? And they're playing against men. All right, and then they get a chance to play against what happened in 92 kind of changed the game. It gave the rest of the world confidence because they were like, okay, that's how quick Jordan is. That's how quick Magic Johnson is.
They got a first hand, right?
And then as you see now, it's not that the Americans are getting worse. It's that everyone else is just improving. You're seeing the Porzingis. You're seeing Luka Doncic. You're seeing these players performing here, and they're fearless.
In their first year.
Luka Doncic and these guys have been pros since they've been like 13, 14 years of age. So they have a significant advantage at the ground level than our kids do, and that's what you're seeing right now. And then at some point, we have to address the issue. We have to address the issue and how we're going to help today's youth.
The Bulls have been a team that has subscribed to that. And I think of Tony Kukoc as an example of, you know, kind of the fans were scratching heads about this kid from Croatia that nobody knew about, and we drafted him, but we're not going to see him for 2 years or whatever it might be. Right. And we've seen that at different times throughout, even now with Lauri Markkanen. There seems to be a movement for GMs in the National Basketball Association to bring those players in and almost have preferential treatment over the other players.
Well, you say this is the best league in the world. You just look at the major awards in NBA this year, okay? The defensive player of the year was Rudy Gobert. The MVP was Giannis. The rookie of the year was the kid from Dallas, right? And then you have the sixth man or the most improved was Siakam.
And you're right. I didn't even think about that, right?
So this league is based on talent. Can't ever forget that. So wherever the best talent is where the executives and the NBA is going to go.
You had a stint as an executive. You worked for Jerry Krause. You were on a fast track to be a GM in the NBA. Things changed. The Bulls went in a different direction.
Right.
Why haven't you looked to get into the GM game? Why an agent?
I got into this business, you know, I just call it a business. I don't know what business I'm in, right? When I got done playing, I was just curious. I was curious of how I was drafted. Like, how did I get here? You know, like, when I walked in, I saw Gatorade signs. How did they get here? How did that Coca-Cola sign get there? How did these, what's going on? Why do we need commercials? You know, why is Ahmad Rashad always interviewing Michael Jordan? Like, it just didn't happen by accident, right? You know, I remember, it's the quick story. So when I was playing, I wasn't starting, but I was always curious in the playoffs, how come we had to have that Gatorade cup sitting on our table during the post-game interview. And I was fascinated by that. Like, so Jordan and Pippen would come up there and Phil Jackson. And I would always be standing in the back. And there, someone would always be there to put that Gatorade cup right there. And you would always see it on television. And I thought, why is that so important? But what it was that important that somebody knew why
it
needed to
be there.
And
it was their job.
It was their job.
Right.
So that's why I became a GM, because I wanted to know why that cup was there. And that's why I became an executive, is because I wanted to understand all of this. Like, how did this, you know, why is this building called the United Center? Why is that called Staples Center? You know, why is this called American Airlines Arena? Like, I was that guy. And so working with, you know, the late Jerry Krause, who's no longer with us, and Jerry Reinsdorf, and they allowed me to see how a kid was drafted, how a kid was evaluated, how a kid was traded, how a kid was developed.
That has to help you now, right? Like, as an agent, you understand what GMs are thinking because you were in that position.
I was in that position. And then once I understood that, I just thought it was a natural fit for me to say, God, I wish I would have known those things when I was a player. I just played. Like, no one ever explained that to me. So that's how I became an agent, because I was like, as the kids were getting younger, the experience they were coming with was less. So then I thought it was only a natural bridge to be able to share my experience to help this kid, because that was going to be needed. They're going to have to learn it somewhere, and they're not going to learn it sitting on a bench. They're not going to learn it in the G League. You know, they're not staying in school long enough to learn it there. So there is a gap. And that's why I became an agent, and that's kind of how it happened. It just happened naturally. I didn't plan it.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a break. We'll get an update for the news. BJ Armstrong, my guest, the three-time champion with the Chicago Bulls, now super agent in the NBA. Let's talk about what the demands are and what the pressures are, the challenges, and what you have to do as an agent and manager in 2019, coming up right after the news here in Extension 720 on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Welcome back to Extension 720 on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. BJ Armstrong is here. BJ Armstrong, of course, the three-time champ for the Chicago Bulls, all-star, former GM. He was a broadcaster for a little bit. Then you moved into the world of management,
right,
and agency, and that's where you're at now. Famously, your client, Derrick Rose. And that's where we in Chicago got to know you were a manager.
Oh, wow.
I mean, there was plenty of times where Derrick Rose, there'd be a note in the paper that would say something like, BJ Armstrong says Derrick Rose is happy to be on the Bulls. You're like, why is BJ talking for Derrick? And then you're like, oh, he's an agent. I had no idea, right?
Exactly.
But so how did that come about? Because that's probably your most famous client to us, the Chicago Bulls fans.
Well, like I said, I got into the business because I just saw a need, right? When I was an executive, you know, we were drafting these young kids, and they were just kids. And there was no preparation to come from a high school player to an NBA player. You know, Jerry Krause, one of the things I learned from him was how to properly evaluate a player and evaluate talent. And he would always say, you know, you draft toughness. And I learned to kind of understand what that meant over the years. But there was no way for these kids to learn how to be tough because there weren't any steps involved, right? There was no maturity. You know, I was going to take a young kid like a Tyson Chandler and all of a sudden put him out there against Charles Oakley. And then when it doesn't work, he doesn't have the experience. He doesn't have the body strength. He doesn't have he doesn't even know this game. This is the first time he's played in probably the state of Wisconsin or wherever you're playing. So you had all of these firsts, but you're having all these kids. And then, you know, you'll see a great talent like a LeBron James or a Kobe Bryant come, and now we're expecting all of these high school kids. And I just saw an opportunity to, like, bridge the gap.
I saw the documentary, which was great. The documentary on Derrick Rose. And you were a big role in it and being a part of it. But it was amazing to me because Derrick Rose is a good example. And he could be as unique as possible, and he could be like every other kid that comes out. And the fact that he had a lot of talent and a lot of people around him since mm-hmm. he was 11 years old or even younger. And at a certain point, he created a close-knit family and industry around him. How do you get in on that? I don't mean it like in a profit way. You're not part of that crew. And it seems like in the documentary talking about, he just really wanted to rely on his family. So how do you as an agent come to Derrick Rose and say, hey, I want to be a part of your unit?
Well, the great thing about him and his family is, you know, obviously he's a very talented young man. He's gifted. Outside of Michael Jordan, I've never seen a more gifted athlete. And the thing that brought me that when I first saw Derrick Rose, right, and I always relied on my own experiences. I've only seen one player that beat Michael Jordan in his prime, and that was Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas was that good of a player where he could affect the game to beat a Michael Jordan's talent in his prime. It's the last team and the last player. And that fascinated me because I knew by my own experience how good Michael Jordan was. But I saw a player who could control the game in a way and such that he could beat the other players because he can control the tempo of the game, right? So as a point guard, I've always understood, I don't know how I understood it, the importance of tempo. Like Magic Johnson, people thought he was pointing, but he mm-hmm. was, it's like the flow. He knew how to control the flow. So when I saw Jason Kidd, I was like, oh, wow. When you see these players who kind of, it's like one of those things. I don't know what it is. I don't know how you learn it, but you learn it. So when I saw Derrick Rose, I saw a player that I knew was a better physical talent than Isaiah Thomas. And I saw a player who could affect the game and not score. Now, that is very, very, very hard to do. But he was such a gifted athlete. And when I saw him, I was just like, I remember I looked around like, is anyone else seeing what I'm seeing? Right? Because I saw this like incredible gift. And his biggest asset to me is his ability to listen and learn. He has an incredible, incredible ability to take an idea. We can discuss an idea, and then he could actually go out there and do it.
There was some rumblings about him coming back to Chicago this summer, and there was a lot of stuff looking up for this interview. You know, all the recent stuff was you saying that there's a chance he could come back to Chicago. Right. How close did that come? Was that
there was some discussion here, and I think that was all before the draft order and all of the things. And look, you never know how things are going to fall into place. But if things were to happen right, Derrick would have definitely been open to playing. He definitely would have been open to coming back here. I mean, this is home. This isn't like a kid who played here. You know, I wasn't from Chicago. Chicago just kind of adopted me here. This is Derrick's home, right? When the season is over with, he comes back here.
And arguably one of the most enigmatic, unique, successful athletes in Chicago history. Derrick Rose is either liked or hated in Chicago. It's very we talked about the documentary and the texts that come in say one way or the other, you know. Why is Chicago so just because a player got hurt, because of what happened behind the scenes, why is he such a polarizing basketball player?
Well, one, you see the talent. You can't argue his talent. When I think about what he accomplished in such the period that he did, it's really an amazing story. When you think about the teams that he was surrounded with and the players that he played with and able to compete at that level, it's in a phenomenal, phenomenal thing. And I remember his very first playoff game. His very first game was against the Boston Celtics in the playoffs. I as a former player, I never like to interfere with the game day routine because, you know, every player is different. Every player has their... Still to this day, which is funny, he's like 12 years in and we still like, we talk a lot, right? We talk a lot about the game and how he should approach the game, and he throws ideas and I'll tell him what I see, so forth. But this was a special game because this was going to be a very first playoff game. And I remember Chuck Daly and Phil Jackson, all the great coaches I played for, they said, you only have really one time to ever speak to a player. I just say things and then he kind of takes from it what he wants. But this one, I wanted to be very specific because I knew this was going to be the
intense,
one time.
Right?
This was going to be intense. And he was very focused. So I remember he called and he was like, are you coming out? I was like, no, I'm not going to come there. I said, you got to do things on your own. This is your life. This is your world. You know, you gotta. This will be a special moment for you. You'll always remember your very first playoff game. And so he was like, "Well, what should I do?" And I knew he was going to ask a question. And I had this, and I remember what I told him. I said, "Look, it's your very first playoff game, and you're playing against like Hall of Famers. You're playing against Kevin Garnett, Paul
championship
Pierce,
team, right?
Rondo was a young player, but they had Ray Allen
yeah,
on
right.
the team. And I said they have like a Hall of Fame coach, Doc Rivers. So the very first game." Is the most important game in the playoffs. He was like, well, we got to win four games. I was like, no, this is your first game. You have to come out and punch them in the face the very first game. And I told him that. And you have to promise me that you will do whatever you can and win the first quarter of your very first game. I'll say that is the most important part of this series for you. They're veterans, but for you, you got to come out and let them know that they are in a street fight. No one's going to pick you to win, so you got nothing to lose. If you don't play well, who cares? But let them know what Chicago is all about. You're a Chicago kid, and you punch them right in the face in the very first game, in the very first quarter. I said, if you win the first quarter, you might win the game. He was like, Is that how the playoffs is played? I was like, no, that's not how the playoffs is played. But
that's
how
you're going to play the playoffs.
This is how you're going to just attack it like
right.
this. And then after they know they're in a fight, whenever they realize that they're in a fight, it might be the second game or the third game, but you're going to let them know that Derrick Rose and the Chicago Bulls are here to fight. Now, whoever wins the game, let the talent determine that. So he took it to heart. And I remember watching the game, and I thought, all of these things sound good, right? But he actually went out and did it. Right. And after the game, he was like, was that hard enough? And he had like 36 points or something. But it was just beautiful how he was able to execute it. And he absorbed all of that. And
made it, I mean, really put himself on the map.
They lost the series in seven games.
Weren't even supposed to be in it.
So why is he such a polarizing figure? Look, say what you want. That young man there is going to give every ounce of breath that's in him to that game of basketball.
What did it mean for you? We saw what it meant to Derrick Rose when he came back last year with the Timberwolves and the fans started chanting MVP. And there was just this moment with Derrick Rose where the fans seemed to show their love and appreciation for him. What did that mean for him? But what did it mean for you?
Again, I said I've just been lucky. I've seen the guy who created all of this, whatever celebrity or whatever, is this Jordan guy. But when he was creating it, he didn't know he was creating it, right? Again, I just remember like these little moments. You know, he was doing a commercial where for some reason, I want to say it was like a Nike commercial with Spike Lee and whatever. And I just thought it was interesting how he, you know, cut, act, and you do all the things. And I was like, are you acting or is that really you? He was like, one thing I've learned is that the camera is always, you can't lie to that camera. And the one thing about Derrick, I've always encouraged him to do, and I think that's why he is such a figure, is he's true and authentic. That's who he is.
Yeah.
Derrick Rose is Derrick Rose, whether the camera's on and off. That's priceless. That's who he is. So what you saw in the documentary, that's who he really
is. That's who he is.
When I had to call him and tell him about the trade, that wasn't like a
stage thing.
That's who he is. And love it, but you got to respect it.
Yeah.
The young man has lived his life that way, and I was so happy for him. He had the courage to tell his story. He had the courage to tell his story because this, you know, we all tend to talk about the good times in our life, right? You walk in someone's office, they'll show you all the high points, right? You know, all the plaques on the wall. But as a player and a person who lived in the public life myself, you know, you get a chance to see the ups, the downs, the goods, the bads, and then the indifferent. And Derrick has the courage to allow you to see that. And he's not afraid of that for whatever reason. This is the world we live in today,
yeah.
right? So I'm always so proud of him that he has the courage to do it because he's not a kid that's on social media because he wants more likes or he wants more followers. I mean, if anything, we're like, Derrick, your partners are asking you to, you have like the Adidas Rose Levens coming out. And he's like, oh, yeah,
right.
I got to tweet about this. Like,
that's the new version of the Gatorade Cup,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. But today's kid, you can't keep him off.
Yeah.
And he's, but that's who he is.
Okay, so I'll wrap here because, you know, we can talk for hours. BJ Armstrong in studio. But great way to end, to talk about today's player. As you get more and more clients, the world has changed for basketball players. Right. They don't need to go to the press. They can go to Twitter. They can go to Snapchat. They can go wherever they want to go.
Yep.
There are also, with LeBron James and even leading the union and the players' union, you're seeing a more socially conscious NBA where these players are stepping up when there's social injustices in the world. Kneeling like Colin Kaepernick in the NFL, that's not an issue in the NBA. It seems like you know that's going to happen if something is out of whack. As an agent and as a manager, when there are so many ways for players to get involved in things off the court when it comes to political causes, social causes, whatever it might be that might end up being controversial, how do you approach it? How do you stay true and make sure that the player is focusing on basketball but at the same time being authentic in that space?
Look, all of these young men that come into the business that I have an opportunity to work with, right, they have opinions. And I'm huge on allowing young people to express themselves and to be able to not only talk, but be heard. You know, I'm 50 and I never want to forget what it was like to be 20 because those were fun times, right? I had a lot of fun.
I had fun when I was 20. You were winning championships when you were 20.
And the difference today with the kids today is, you know, I was 20 with no money in my pocket. Now you're 20 and these kids have millions of dollars in their pocket, right? So they have enough resources to actually have a real problem. Fortunately, I didn't have that problem. And then I didn't have the social media and the phones and all of those things. Thank God I didn't have those things. But we had a great time. So I never want to forget. And I always encourage these young people to express themselves.
Do you find yourself constantly in damage control when one of your clients is like, this is what I think of this ref. And you're like, yay, man.
I don't, because I've always taken this approach. When the clients stop bringing me their problems, then I failed at my job. I don't want to be the old guy to say back in the day. That's my whole thing in life. I'm the guy who says, you know what? I get it. You guys have a different set of problems that we didn't have. But I am more interested in the human condition, probably more than anything. So the problems that today's youth face, I find so fascinating. Because the environment has changed, right? I can be stuck in the 90s and tell you how great it was back then. But in 2019, the problems that I see today's youth have, man, I go, wow. I go home to my wife and I go, I can't believe this. This is what's going on. This is what Snapchat. This is what's really happening with Tinder. This is what's happening with Instagram. So it's just fascinating to see how technology has changed. It's really just a study on human beings and the human condition. And I don't have all the answers, but I am very fortunate that my clients bring me their problems. And that's the one thing that has allowed me to stay in this business for as long as I have, because I always tell them, I say, if you bring me the problem, we probably can do something with it. If I hear about it from someone else, it's probably too late.
Right.
So I've been very fortunate to work with great people. You know, I've made my fair share of mistakes and will continue. And but the kids, you know, it's great to hear their problems. It really is. I find it unique. I don't know. I'm just wired that way. I find the problems that they have in today's society, like, wow. Like, it
true,
really is.
It's
like, man, like, I never had that. I never had to worry about someone filming me. Or someone.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
You know, all the things that you have. I never had to worry about, you know, whatever happened in the game suddenly going up on YouTube. I didn't have to worry about that. Right. And so, you know what? It's great. It keeps me on my toes for sure. Things happen so fast and keeps me around the game. So, and I love the kids today. They're great. I love the problems that they have. And, we'll see what 10 years. I'm sure there'll be different stuff that we'll be dealing with then.
B.J. Armstrong, all-star point guard who won 3 championships with the Bulls, now a super agent who reps Derrick Rose and others. Thanks so much for coming in, being my guest
Thank
tonight
you.
In Extension 720. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you.